Well, I'm with Jason Parkinson and Jess Hurd. Jason's a videographer and Jess a photographer, but both cover protests a lot. And over the last few years, have had experience of police and policing a protest, and also have been at the sharp end of surveillance activities as well. And they've had personal experiences of police surveilling them and their colleagues. Can you tell me, Jason, the first time you kind of felt that there was a slight change in the way police tactically were approaching protests?
The first time I actually noticed the Ford intelligence team taking an interest in me was at the G8 in Scotland. It was on the first day of protests. And since then, within a year of that, from like July 2005, by a year later, some of these officers are referring to me by first name, on first name terms, even though I didn't know who these people were. I didn't even realize they were intelligence officers. I just thought that they were police officers or observers or something. I didn't realize they were surveillance. But it's been more so in the last year, I think, through 2007 and towards the end of 2007, 2008, when I came back from Mexico in August 2007, I'd only been away for 3 weeks. And the first protest I covered was the Stop the War, Troops Out Now protest in October. And just the numbers of policing that was out then and the numbers of surveillance officers out, I'm not sure whether it was just taking a break from England for 3 weeks and going to a completely different country, but coming back, I just saw a really visible change.
Now, this is important, this part, is obviously that there were more out, but did you at that point feel that you were a target for those surveillance operations?
As it came through, I noticed that I was being photographed a lot more towards the end of 2007. By February 2008, we were actually, myself and other colleagues were saying, there's something going on here. They're actually focusing on the press who are turning up to cover demonstrations more than they were the protesters.
And when you say they were focusing on the press, can you kind of describe the kind of activity we're talking about? I mean, these are police officers who, and some of them are civilian assistants, but they are equipped with cameras and, I say cameras, I mean both still cameras and also video cameras, right?
Yeah.
How does it work and how do you know that they're particularly targeting you?
One of the big giveaways is when you're in broad daylight and you suddenly notice a flash go off very close to you and the camera's pointing at you. That seems to be a tactic that the Ford intelligence teams do to let people know that they've taken their photograph. This is a part of the overt surveillance that they're, or one of the tactics that they use, which is to make sure that you know that they're documenting you. So they're taking photographs of you, they're filming you. I've had occasions where Ford intelligence officers have come up and started speaking to me, and then you realize either their radio's left on or one of these devices they have on the wrist is recording everything you say, which is quite a bit of a devious thing to do when they're coming up just having a friendly chat, which happens a lot between press and police when you're covering these things. But to actually turn around and after 30 seconds realize everything you've said to that officer is being recorded, that's quite worrying stuff. But it's things like that. You notice that you're being photographed, you're being filmed, they're writing notes on you. One of the times I was stopped and searched, actually on the Troops Out Now protest, going towards the protest, they referred to me by first name terms and said, good morning, Jason, are you going to the demonstration? And I said, yes, of course I am. You know who I am and what I do. And they said, well, we're going to have to stop and search you because you're going to an illegal demonstration carrying a camera. And I said, yes, carrying a press card as well, because you know who I am. When they stopped me and said, we now have to search you, then they tried to deny that they didn't know who I was. And I said, well, you've just used my first name, so you know who I am. You've seen my press card. I've seen you guys before. You've seen me before. You know exactly who I am and what my job is, yet now you're going to stop and search me as a terrorist suspect. And they literally held me there for 30 minutes, and I can remember he wrote nearly 3 pages of notes on my clothing, down to questioning me why one of my shoelaces was black and one was red, and said, what significance is it? The answer being, my other shoelace broke. What do you think? And I've only got a red one left. Those kind of things were going on all the time.
Okay, so this has happened. But now, the next important question is, people might be listening to this and say, well, it's a one-off, you know? Maybe you've got a bad apple cop. In your opinion, how common is this? How often does it happen?
To actually be documented, it's every time you go out. Since
every single time you cover a protest?
Every single time I will cover a protest. It's been, in the last few months, I wouldn't say it's calmed down, it's just become more covert. the Ford intelligence teams are actually starting to get a little, can I use the word sneaky? Yes, they're being sneaky with the way they're taking your photograph. They'll nip out from a corner, snap one shot of you, and do it that way, rather than being as overt as they were, say, 6 months to a year ago.
Okay.
But they're still documenting you all the time.
Jess, can you tell me about your experience of covering protests, and have you encountered Ford's intelligence team police officers and what they're like?
I mean, I think the first occasion I realised they were surveying the journalists was actually back in, I think, 99. It was the anniversary of the Seattle WTO protests, and there was a protest at Euston Station. They did Section 60 there, which is where the police kind of surround the protesters and they kettle them in. And then they were photographing everyone as they came out. And they were doing that to journalists as well. So, you know, my picture is with me holding my press card up, and they were taking names and addresses there. And I was saying, well, everything you need to know is on the press card.
Have you noticed it's got worse recently over the last year as well?
I think policing definitely has got, they're definitely down on incidents in more numbers. I mean, we had climate camp back in the summer, and the policing there was incredible. I mean, how many forces were down there?
26 forces, 1,200 police officers.
To cover an event effectively in a field. So, I mean, on one day there, I was stop and searched by the police three times, which I found a little bit excessive on my birthday. And there was the obvious surveillance as well, of you going in and going out of the camp. And, you know, what could I possibly have picked up as a journalist in a field to be searched going out?
Because Section 60 is for if you're carrying a dangerous weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were searching you for dangerous weapons.
Yeah. Obviously, that's my camera.
Yeah. The other thing that people listening might think is you're covering a protest and police are conducting these surveillance operations, whether right or wrong, and if you're in the area, you're going to get caught in the as well. Now, you've told me and you're telling me that you've been targeted specifically, but have they ever followed you away from where a protest is taking place?
Well, yeah, the climate camp, the same day, actually, on the 8th of August, we were all leaving. My colleagues had to wait for me a rather long time because I had to queue up with the protesters to be searched on the way out. You know, they're even taking tent pegs out and looking at people's, taking the batteries out of cameras and things like that. So we all went off. There was a group of us, Getty photographer and others, I think it was seven altogether of us, went off to the local McDonald's to use their Wi-Fi to file the images and the footage.
It's what journalists normally do, isn't it? You go to a restaurant after a protest.
Yeah, and, you know, have a drink and chill out a bit and send the stuff. And I looked up, and the Ford Intelligence, members of the Ford Intelligence team were filming us through the window into the restaurant. And, you know, I immediately kind of, I was like, don't look now, the cops are filming us. And managed to get a picture before he put the camera down straight away.
You had finished covering the protest.
Yeah.
You'd left the area.
Yeah, it was a few miles down the road.
To a McDonald's a few miles down the road with a bunch of journalists, and the police officers had followed you to that restaurant and were filming you through the window.
Yeah.
First question, obvious question is why do you think they're doing that?
I mean, the only reason I could see, apart from the obvious intimidation, was to log that we were sending images from there and that we'd been part of the climate camp thing. I don't know, possibly to try and pick up the images later. I don't know.
Are either of you worried that they are interested in the material that you gather at a protest and that there might be a point where they want to get hold of that?
Well, this is what I mean, that the potential for seizing it later if they identify who is there. But why they couldn't, I mean, they had a lot of footage of us actually at the camp, leaving the camp and in this big, you know, area where they were searching us. So why they needed to follow us to where we were filing, I'm not quite sure, really.
That incident happened after some pretty brutal arrests that had happened outside the climate camp. So that might have had something to do with it. But like you say, it could possibly be to do with they are interested in seeing what we have. And what's being filed and what's going where as well.
I mean, I've got no doubt that people listening to this are going to be quite shocked in their own way. But, you know, one thing that's quite difficult to convey over an audio podcast, but I can see your kind of facial reactions when you're talking to me, is how it feels when you're working and you've got, you know, police officers following you around and videoing you and even following you way away from a protest to a restaurant and filming you there. How does it feel, and what's your personal reaction to that?
To me, it's quite ludicrous, really. It's one of the things, and I'm sure many of the colleagues that I work with have heard me harp on about this endlessly. We don't have money for schools. We don't have money for education. We're privatizing our school system now, and we've got hedge funders running our schools who can't run a global economy. Yet we've got taxpayers' money to follow around journalists, put them under surveillance. When journalists are leaving demonstrations and going to the pub to have a pint, the police are following you in the pub and coming up to talk to you in the pub saying, oh, we're just checking out, see where you are and who you're talking to. That kind of stuff is regular. That goes on all the time. We, on one of the recent Gazan demonstrations, we leave the area from where the pro-Palestinian protesters are protesting outside the Israeli embassy, and we're walking towards a pro-Israeli state lobby group who are protesting outside Iran and their alleged support of Hamas. And we're followed by two of the forward intelligence officers, and one of my colleagues needs to go to the toilet, so he nips into a pub and goes to the toilet. The other two of us stand outside, and I saw them coming, so I switched my camera on, and they walked straight into the camera, and even with the camera on, they started questioning us, saying, where are you going, what do you know, what's going on? And my simple response, being slightly sarcastic that I am, saying, well, you're the intelligence guys, you tell us. That sort of stuff is going on all the time.
Yeah. And what about you, Jess? How does it make you feel when you're trying to do your job, trying to photograph? It's a high-pressured environment. It can be quite tense. There's a lot going on. People are shouting, screaming. There's placards in your face. But then you've got these police officers who are supposed to be, perhaps rightly so, but monitoring activists. That some people think that is wrong, and I think people would be quite surprised they even do that. Mm. But that they're there, and they're monitoring you in that kind of an environment. How do you feel about that?
Outrage, to be honest. I feel very angry by the situation. It's not just protests and demonstrations either. I was stopped before Christmas covering a traveller wedding in the London Docklands, and the police there, three police officers in a car, in an empty car park. You know, it's very intimidating situation. Came over and stopped me under Section 44 of the Terrorism Act, that I could have been doing hostile reconnaissance because I was in the vicinity of City Airport.
And actually the picture you took then, we published in The Guardian, didn't we? And so they stopped and searched you there because they thought you could be doing reconnaissance for terrorism.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but I'd been in the wedding, and some of the guests had said the police had been called, which was part of the story. I'd done interviews about it during the day, about how the police had called to the weddings and the racism and harassment they faced. So I'd gone outside to film, because I was shooting stills and video that day, and panned over to the police car. You know, just an ordinary pan, then put the gear away. I was going to go home then. And they screeched over and got out of the car and detained me for, 45 minutes. I showed them my press card. They called the number on the back, so verified I was a bona fide journalist. And they said, I've got audio of it, they actually say, yes, we know you're here covering a wedding, but, well, I could be doing hostile reconnaissance as well then.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's how they were using the law then. Now with the Section 76, you know, that gives them legitimacy to do even more, really. You know, okay. The other thing that the cop said to me was that, you know, I couldn't use any of the footage or I'd face severe penalties, which...
Which is a lie.
Which is a lie. And that I would have to go... And it was his copyright, and I would have to go through the police press office to use any material.
Yeah. Do you both feel that, you know, this is going to materially affect the way you work in the future? And do you even think that it's going to carry on? You know, we published quite a significant story today. Lots of people are going to read it. There's going to be a big response from the Met and from Kent Police and presumably from the Home Office as well. Do you think there's a rising tide now that there's going to be a change in policy, or do you think it will just carry on?
I hope so, yeah. I really do. We had a media event outside New Scotland Yard this week, and the Police Federation came out basically in support. Stella Rimmington, also ex-MI5 boss, saying that...
And that was about Section 76,
yeah,
of the new terrorism law, which basically says you can't photograph a police officer.
That's right.
In case it could be used for terrorist purposes, more or less, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jason, what about you?
I would like to hope that something is going to change. And for instance, like the way Section 44 of the Terrorism Act has been used not just on the press, but on members of the public, but also with this Section 76. I'd like to be optimistic to say it's going to change, but to be realistic, I don't think it is. And I think there's a bigger question needs to be asked, which is, why have these legislations been brought in, bearing in mind the social unrest that is coming in this country because of the global economic recession, and all these laws are suddenly in place? I think people do need to actually look a bit wider and say, why has this happened? Why are these laws coming in? And to what extent? Because realistically, Section 44 of the Terrorism Act hasn't really caught any terrorists, has it? There's been hundreds of thousands, and there's been very little comeback on the terrorist issue. And realistically, I believe there was a report that was saying on that it wasn't so much to catch terrorists, it was more to make the public feel reassured. Sure. So with this Section 76, to actually start threatening to arrest journalists who are trying to cover stuff, if it's the same age-old question, if the press are not free to cover their stuff in the street, then you no longer have a democratic society. And that's a very big warning sign for everybody in this country.